And then finally, Iran's economy to grow by 2% in 2023, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, has predicted. And it said that Iran's gross domestic product will increase in this period, while the inflation rate and liquidity growth will decline significantly. If that happens, that's good news for Iran. All right, let me introduce our guests who are participants at the Iran Expo 2023 in one capacity or another. First up, we have Amir Nikha. He's the CEO of Nikha Group, and he was also one of the organizers that contributed to this event. All right, Amir Nikha, welcome to Economic Divide. So we appreciate the time you've given us. Obviously, you had to take time out from the expo, but reading your position, tell us what your function is when it came to the Iran Expo 2023.
Hello, I am Amir Nikha, founder and CEO of Nikha Group. Our company provides international business development services. If I want to briefly mention our services, I must say that we help Iranian companies to export their products or have international trade. And we also help foreign companies to expand their business to Iran. Also in recent years, we have bought many trade delegations from Iran to other countries and from other countries to Iran. And we have organized many business events with the aim of introducing business opportunities in Iran and also introducing Iranian products to foreign buyers.
All right, that sounds great. Our next guest, again, who participated at the Iran Expo 2023, Abdulaziz Purail. He's the marketing head at Qlife Pharma. Abdulaziz Purail, welcome to Economic Divide. Tell us what your product or service was that you featured at the expo, and also how can Iran's market actually be to your advantage?
Actually, thank you for inviting me for this event. I'm in the pharmaceutical industry since 15 years. So I'm from Qatar, and we are offering some pharmaceutical product to Iran market, as well as I'm thinking about to buy some product from Iran to my Qatar market. So today I'm here for both, because I have some clients here, and as well as I'm a supplier for them as well. So I find Iran is one of the, Iran will be one of the good market for Arab MENA region. So we are trying to expand our market to Iran as well, also to Iraq also. Because many of the Iranians have business in Iraq also. So I can facilitate my business, my market to Iraq through Iran. So that's also my objective.
Thank you for that. Obviously, this shows how regional countries are integrating amongst themselves. As mentioned over there, he also wants to sell his product to the Islamic Republic, and in addition to see what he can provide the Islamic Republic when it comes to the services that he offers. Now, let me bring in Mohammad Reza Faraji. He's the CEO of Palapal Puya Iran, in order to get a perspective from an Iranian supplier. Okay, welcome to Economic Divide, Mohammad Reza Faraji. Introduce yourself and tell us what is the product or service that you are offering, and of course how you think this can be of benefit to you at this that was a benefit to you with your presence at the expo.
I have to say, please let me. I introduce you myself to you. Okay, I see you at my company. Okay. Our company is in the field of cosmetic and healthy, and we produce some products like anti-hair loss tonic, eyebrow and eyelash serum for girls of them, okay? And I try to provide my effective materials from a best company in Japan, I mean Fuji Sangyo, okay? And this material is FMRE. It means it's in a state of Fuji mulberry root extract, okay? Mulberry root extract, according to the Fuji method, is an innovation, okay? And I focus on it. And I am try to introduce this product in Iran and other countries, and I hope get some achievement again.
Time now for the InfoNews section of the program. First item up is de-dollarization. Yes, we've made a promise. Every time there's developments on this, we'll bring it to you. In this case in point, key U.S. ally has reduced the role of the dollar in its trade, namely South Korea and, in addition, Indonesia. They are planning to switch to national currencies. So, again, the de-dollarization trend continues. Next up, there's a downgrade on the country of France. Why is there a downgrade? Well, Fitch has downgraded its credit rating. The agency has said the social unrest over pensions, that could limit the government's ability to pass new structural changes. More challenges for the French President Emmanuel Macron. This is a very worrying sign, the next topic for the United States, and it concerns the U.S. bank failures. We picked it, and in essence, we're going to actually have a program on this coming up in about 2 weeks' time. But this is about U.S. bank seizures. First Republic Bank was actually seized by U.S. regulators. Now, this lender that's struggling is going to be acquired by, well, J.P. Morgan, no surprise there in a sense. This happens to be the third U.S. lender to fail, leading many U.S. depositors to pull their money out of U.S. banks. And based on the research that we have done, though we can't confirm it, but there are leading indicators that there are more U.S. banks that are going to be failing and need some kind of rescue. The question is, will the U.S. government come to that rescue? Then switching gears, we picked this topic. It's about world hunger. It's an important topic where hunger is now gripping a quarter of a billion as prospects of war or war itself is roiling food supplies. Economic shocks of food inflation has worsened the crisis. No surprise there, actually. Acute food insecurity has jumped by a third to 258 million people in the year 2022. Those topics were the ones that we picked.
You're listening to Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
When it comes to the purpose of Iran Expo 2023, the way to gauge the success is how much additional revenue will trade with these countries generate. Well, let's take a look at first at Iran's GDP to see where it is at currently before we see where it is going. All right, taking a look at this graph, well, Iran's GDP experienced a fluctuation from negative to positive, then back to negative. Obviously, there are reasons for that. For example, what we picked was from the year 2015 through 2022, 2015, negative 1.3%. You could see the fluctuation, a huge increase up to 13.4%. That was when the JCPOA was signed. Then down to 3.8%, and you have two negatives in a row of minus 6.0 and minus 6.8%. Now, the two years after that, you could see that the GDP growth was in the positive. The reason why 2022 is not mentioned in the title is because the records that we had access to did not confirm that figure of plus 2%, but most likely it hovers around that. All right, next up, in order to fit the purpose of the theme of the Expo 2023, we need to take a look at Iran's non-oil exports, which, again, is the focus of this expo, in order to see what type of revenues it has generated. So in 1 year, March 2021 to March 2022, Iran generated a little over $53 billion in revenues, which registered a 10% growth. The overall value, $112.821 billion, was also registered with an 11.2% growth for that figure. Now, and these are Iran's top export destinations in order of rank, which is important because obviously Iran wants to expand that. But China, Iraq, Turkey, the UAE, and India is where majority of Iranian products go to. Okay, let's bring back our guest. Abdulaziz Parayel is marketing head at QLife Pharma, who rejoins us. Abdulaziz, welcome back to Economic Divide. Well, we want to take a look at the Expo 2023 as a whole. Aside from oil and petrochemicals, which is what Iran is known for, what many perhaps are not aware is the wide array of products and services that Iran actually provides. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, actually, mainly, before I completed my third visit to Iran. So before I came to Iran, I was thinking about that you are having only the oil, because actually I'm an Indian, living in Qatar since almost 20 years now. So I was thinking about only petroleum products and all that, whatever that, that's what you have. But when I come to Iran and I saw your portfolio, it's wonderful. So you have everything like India. So you are exporting to most of the countries, especially US, UK, sorry, you're not UK and other countries you are exporting. And also, I'm from Qatar, as I told you. So we were having a struggle before 5 years. I think you may know that, because all GCC country, they put on us on crisis. You remember 2017? At that time, Iran was the first country who helped us. So Qatar government is always supporting Iran. So I'm here as a part of Qatar government also. So my company, QLife Pharma, is representing Qatar Development Bank. Is funded by Qatar Development Bank. So they're also assisting, they're also facilitating our business relationship with Iran. So we are happy to be to work with Iranian companies in pharmaceutical sector, as well as we are looking for some food products, some supplements, those kind of products.
Okay, very good. Hopefully you'll get that. Welcoming back to the program, Mohammad Reza Faraji, CEO of Palapal Puya Iran, who joins us now. Mohammad Reza Faraji, welcome back. Many of the countries in attendance in this expo are integrating themselves amongst themselves, and many in a shift away from the West, especially regional countries in West Asia, of course, Iran being one of them. Now, the strongest common growth has been seen in Asia when it comes to predictions made by the World Bank and the IMF. Do you believe the world doesn't begin and end with the West, in particular the U.S., and countries present here can actually reach trade levels that are ideal to them?
Generally, this strong economic economic situation will not change, I think, in my opinion, will not change. But it's better to say it will be adjusted. They don't give up. I mean, the power, the strong economic power never give up. And on the other hand, we need to get our share from the world. Okay. And I think nobody wants to fight. So we have to try more and more to provide some products, in my opinion. Our products would be the best or the first in a product. If you do this, you can hope to, you can hope other people buy your product.
Let's switch now to Mahdi in his second feature of the two-part coverage that he did on the Expo 2023. Mahdi, what do you have for us in this segment?
And now I'm joined by a businessman from the African country of Uganda, Mr. Jamil. Mr. Jamil, yes. Please introduce yourself and your company to our viewers.
My name is Dr. Jamil Sebaru. I'm the president of the Uganda Farmers Dialogue. I work with farmers and I work with the business people. In my country, I represent about 7,500 farmers. That's why I'm here. I want to thank Mugarabi Technical Ventures Africa, because they are the people who organized this and invited us to come. This is a great opportunity for all of us in Africa, because we've been looking for a way of getting our products to Iran, but also getting products from Iran to our country.
Exactly.
Okay? And this is an opportunity now. The difference between so many products that we are getting in our countries is the quality.
Uh-huh.
We understand that the quality in Iran is a very good quality.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of prices is not a problem. The biggest problem is quality. And when we talk about Uganda, we are talking about all the other countries surrounding Uganda,
uh-huh.
including Kenya, Tanzania, Congo, South Africa, all those countries. We are the food basket.
Welcome to the Quick Tech section. I'm Mahdi Abbasian. Iran's economy is set to explode based on participation of regional countries like Iran's increased exposure, as seen in this Expo 2023. Let's take a look at the budget, then GDP performance, to see the potential of Iran's trade advancement. On December 12th, Raisi presented a draft budget for 2022-2023 to Parliament. Raisi's first budget was the opposite of the former president's final budget. Instead of betting on sanctions relief, Raisi planned for a continuation of U.S. sanctions and set modest targets for oil exports, but it set a higher target for non-oil exports. Government spending was set to increase by 9%, but considering that annual inflation hovered around 40% in December, the government actually cut expenditures in real terms. And how has Raisi done that? Iran's gross domestic product reached nearly 55,000 trillion riyals, or about $14 billion, in the 9 months to December 21, 2022, showing an increase of 5.1% against the similar period in 2020. The highest GDP growth in the Iranian economic sector in March to December was reported for manufacturing and mining, as the sector expanded by 7.1%. The Iranian services sector grew by 5.1% over the same period, while the agriculture sector, a best performer of the economy in recent years, contracted by 3.9%. That's the end of this segment of the program.
Time now to bring in a couple more of the attendees of the Expo 2023. Joining us in this segment, we have Hamza Imran Rauf from the Alhambra Trading Company. He's a manager there, and he attended the Iran Expo 2023. Welcome to the program. Let me start out by getting your impression about how you have this huge expo, 800 domestic and foreign companies that participated, showcasing their products and achievements. Tell us about the products and service that you offered and how obviously Iran's market can be to your advantage.
Okay, as I can see in international market, the cost of processing and finishing the product is very high. And now in Iran, we have this potential that is a point, good point for us. We can find everything here with low price. So the processing price and the cost and also finishing product is very cheap when you compare it with other market in the world. So the quality also, yeah, we can say acceptable for market. Sometimes we need to add some standards for that those markets, but so far, as I can see, everything is, I mean, are good enough to send them to other countries.
All right, thank you so much for that. We do appreciate it. Let me bring in our next guest for this segment. Let's see who we have. We have from the general manager of the company by the name of FAUEA. He is Fu Ilan. And the company name is Ferro Alloy United East Asia, who joins us. Or is it Fujian? I'm sorry. if I'm pronouncing that properly. Welcome to Economic Divide. We'd like to get an idea from you in terms of how Iran obviously is known for its petrochemicals and oil, but Iran's manufacturing is not just about that, and it covers a wide array of products. Tell us how you could interact with Iran when it comes to bilateral trade, both from what you offer and then from what Iran can offer you.
I have to say that it's a very successful exhibition, especially the Salon 41, collect all the provinces together, all the, investment office, the governors. In this way, people don't have to go around all Iran to search the locations. They just come in one lobby and they will see whole opportunities in Iran. And that's why we came here, and fortunately we found this top lease, and we hope to very soon start our future plant in here. If we really join in such exhibitions, we will see actually the products and the companies from Iran are brilliant in the world. So I hope there are more and more such exhibitions could successfully open again and again, so more and more people, foreigners, and will listen to the voice of Iran and will see your products, and it's one important step. You are going to go to the world again.
Iran is a country with vast resources, not only in the oil and petrochemical sectors. Given that it has been under sanctions for decades, its full potential has not been met, not even close. Well, this administration, headed by President Ebrahim Raisi, is determined to raise Iran's revenues by increasing Iran's trade. Iran Trade Expo 2023 is a perfect example of how it is doing this when it comes to non-oil exports. Tell us what you thought about the program. This was a big deal for Iran in terms of the number of countries in attendance, and, of course, with the goal of expanding trade relations. From Mikhail Betagli and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ideal University Student brings change in thinking and reality of the society and world.
The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with university students and representatives of student associations in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on April 18, 2023. The Israelites practiced resistance in Egypt under Pharaoh for many years. Of course, they ruined everything later on, but they resisted for many years. It was this resistance that brought Moses to them. He started his movement and they followed him. This led to the destruction of Pharaoh and his system. This is what awaiting the reappearance of the Saviour is about. Awaiting the reappearance means anticipating the removal of all the lacks that you just mentioned. The number of lacks that exist is 10 times more than this, but you didn't mention all of them. This is what awaiting the reappearance means. It means being prepared. It means you need to think. And it means not imagining yourself to be at a dead end. This imagining that you are at a dead end is a very bad thing. This is the meaning behind awaiting the reappearance of Imam Mahdi. You need to keep these things in mind. Of course, the Almighty God has repeatedly said in the Quran, Allah has ordained that I shall surely prevail, I and my messengers. The Holy Quran, Surah 58, verse 21.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Allah has ordained means that it is definite in God's law that the way of the prophets will prevail. There is no room for discussion on this. Allah will indeed defend those who have faith. The Holy Quran, Surah 22, verse 38. God will defend the believers. There is no doubt about this. And the Holy Quran also says, we desired to show favor to those who were oppressed in the land, and to make them imams. Surah 28, verse 5. No doubt exists in this. It is the promise of Almighty God. We have seen these realities ourselves. Now, there was a time when we used to quote these things from the Quran, Nahjul Balagha and Sahifa Sajjadiya, but now we have seen these things in our own lives. Now, you are still very young. God willing, when you have lived to be 10 or 20 years more than I am now, you shall see many things. Me, at this age, I have seen this myself. I witnessed the victory of the revolution. It was a victory of truth over falsehood. No one thought or imagined that it could succeed.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
shock and desperation. Children traumatized. Mothers losing their children. Israel claims it is not targeting civilians, but the injured and the dead tell another story. Like that Palestinian girl, carried by her father. With over 100 wounded, how many times will Israel kill civilians like women and children, yet claim it is targeting resistance fighters and leaders? When is it enough?
Are you ready to say enough is enough? As the highest authority responsible for the maintenance of international peace and security?
As of Saturday, May 13, Israel has so far assassinated 6 Islamic Jihad leaders, and it has stated it is after more blood. The killing machine has no mercy. One bombing operation involved 40 aircrafts and drones, courtesy of the United States. The incessant sound of drones creates a constant state of terror, panic, and anxiety among the 2 million people living in the Gaza Strip. Al-Mizan, a human rights group based in Gaza, notes that between the years 2000 and 2023, at least 2,148 Palestinians, including 378 children and 86 women, were killed by Israeli drones. Nearly 350 were killed inside their homes, including more than 100 children, underscoring the reality that there is no safe place in Gaza. And these are conservative figures. Resistance groups in the Gaza Strip have not stood idle. Palestinian factions like the Islamic Jihad said they are united in their joint response. Resistance factions have been relentless in their rocket attacks. Many have reached as far as Tel Aviv, or close to it, like the town, which claimed the life of one Israeli, injuring 5 others. Israel getting a taste of its own medicine. As a matter of fact, the resistance group's firepower has overwhelmed Israel's so-called Iron Dome system. In one tally, more than 500 rockets were fired at Israel. Of these, 368 rockets made it over the border, and 154 were intercepted by the so-called Iron Dome missile defense system. Simple math shows that this dome had a 30% success rate. And Israel better be careful. Reports indicate it has so far only hit Islamic Jihad targets. Israel knows that Palestinian resistance groups are believed to be capable of firing thousands of rockets, which could quickly exhaust Israel's Iron Dome anti-missile system. On top of that, Israel is unable to sustain prolonged disruption to its civilian economy amid widespread fear and panic among its population. Israel is now at its weakest. Regionally, it is isolated more than ever. Iran and Saudi Arabia's reconciliation have solidified the axis of resistance, especially after Saudi Arabia hosted Hamas recently and is warming up to Hezbollah. And from within, Israel is unraveling due to the revolt by Israelis against the judicial reforms. Protests now in its 4th month. There's growing consensus that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu launched the assault on Gaza to appease his fractious, extreme coalition, particularly Itamar Ben-Gvir, in order to distract from the protests. Yet Netanyahu may be risking it all when the Tel Aviv skyline is filled with too many rockets that would rain down and eliminate its presence on Palestinian land. The U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen urged Congress to raise the $31.4 trillion debt limit and avert an unprecedented default, saying that a failure to do so would have dire consequences. Yellen's comments come after she warned of an economic catastrophe if the U.S. fails to raise its debt ceiling in the coming weeks. She has also previously warned that the U.S. could fail to meet its debt obligations sooner than expected, and it may run out of measures as early as June 1. Yellen issued the latest in a series of increasingly stark warnings and remarks prepared for a press conference being in Japan with her counterparts from the group of seven G7 rich nations, as well as India, Indonesia, and Brazil. Yellen's comments came as a political stalemate over raising the debt limit was forcing the Treasury Department dangerously close to worst-case scenario, which is a potential U.S. debt default.
The notion of defaulting on our debt is something that would so badly undermine the U.S. and global economy that I think it should be regarded by everyone as unthinkable.
In order to avoid a default on the nation's debt, Congress must vote to either raise or suspend the debt limit before the Treasury runs out of emergency funding. But with only days left this month, time is running out to reach a deal. Democratic leaders are calling for the limit to be raised, but Republicans want spending cuts and other conditions to be agreed first. The last time this happened, the U.S. saw its credit rating downgraded and interest rates on its existing debt go up. Even if the nation avoids tumbling over the fiscal cliff, the U.S. economy could suffer.
They're doing the best, to the best of my knowledge, what no other political party has done in the nation's history. They're literally, not figuratively, holding the economy hostage by threatening to default on our nation's debt that we've already incurred.
The debt ceiling is the maximum amount the U.S. government is legally authorized to borrow to meet its obligations. Many investors are bracing for the economic fallout of the deadline for the U.S. to raise the debt ceiling or default on its obligations. The U.S. government has run a deficit averaging nearly $1 trillion every year since the year 2001, meaning that it spends that much more money than it receives in taxes and other revenues.
Congress has told Treasury, you should pay our bills, you should pay our debt. But at the same time, it's told it, you can't borrow anymore to pay those bills and debt. And at the same time, Congress has authorized all of the spending that's being done. So the spending's going out the door. The bills are showing up at Treasury. And Treasury isn't getting enough revenue from taxpayers to pay the bills. And so there's a lot of hand-wringing over what Treasury should do.
Even short of a default, hitting the debt ceiling would stop the government's ability to finance its operations, including providing for the national defense or funding entitlements such as Medicare or Social Security. The default could cause the loss of 3 million jobs, add $130,000 to the cost of an average 30-year mortgage, and raise interest rates enough to increase the national debt by $850 billion. Meanwhile, the recent turmoil in the banking industry have concerned investors. In early May, officials closed San Francisco-based First Republic Bank, making it the third U.S. bank to collapse in the past 2 months. Most of First Republic's assets are being acquired by J.P. Morgan, Silicon Valley Bank, and Signature Bank, whose clients were mostly from the tech industry, collapsed in March under similar circumstances. But they are not alone. The U.S. Federal Reserve has revealed that 722 banks reported unrealized losses exceeding 50% of their capital at the end of the third quarter of 2022. Those losses have occurred because banks bought lots of treasuries and bonds when interest rates were near zero. Now, as the Federal Reserve raises rates to combat inflation, the value of these bonds has declined.
Israel has kept pounding the Gaza Strip, targeting areas in the southern part of the besieged Palestinian territory. It came after the Israeli military conducted airstrikes against the Gaza Strip, assassinating senior Islamic Jihad officials.
The Israeli occupation committed a great crime and treacherous aggression against our people in the Gaza Strip by bombing residential areas and homes, which led to the killing of children and women and targeted the leaders of the resistance. Our people and the resistance know how to respond to this great crime and make the occupation pay the price for this aggression on the Gaza Strip.
Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza have fired rockets towards Israeli sites in retaliation for the regime's deadly air raids, hitting targets as far as Tel Aviv. Gaza's Joint Command of Palestinian Resistance Groups claimed responsibility for firing rockets at Israel, saying in a statement it had fired hundreds of rockets towards the occupied Palestinian territories, including Tel Aviv, in an operation codenamed Revenge of the Free. Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh has warned that Israel will pay the price for the killings. The Palestinian resistance group Lion's Den has warned the Tel Aviv regime of surprise and unprecedented retaliatory attacks
after the assassination of high-profile resistance commanders in Israeli airstrikes. Iran, Lebanon, Egypt, Jordan, amongst many Muslim countries, and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or the OIC, condemned in separate statements the Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip. High-profile commanders of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance movement have been assassinated after Israeli military aircraft launched a series of targeted strikes on the Gaza Strip days after a fiery flare-up of violence set the besieged coastal area on edge. Alongside the assassinations, military compounds and a military position belonging to the Islamic Jihad were targeted as well. The Islamic Jihad resistance commanders in the strikes include Khalil Bahitini, the commander of the Al-Quds Brigades in the northern Gaza Strip, Tariq Izzeddin, a spokesperson for the movement, and Jihad Al-Ghannam, secretary of the movement's military council. Bahitini was the most senior operational commander in the Islamic Jihad and was responsible for the rocket fire towards occupied territories in the past month. Izzeddin was responsible for the communications between the movement and its branches in the West Bank and for transferring funds and coordinating resistance active in the occupied lands. Ghannam was one of the most senior and veteran operatives in Islamic Jihad and served at one point as the commander of the Al-Quds Brigades in the southern Gaza Strip.
This enemy is a criminal entity ever since it was created on the land of Palestine. It assassinated leaders in their homes with their families and children. They did not assassinate them in the battlefield, not in the streets or cars. They assassinated them while they were with their children and killed their children and women along with them.
Meanwhile, Israeli troops have shot dead two young Palestinian men during a military raid in the occupied West Bank city of Kabatia, the latest in a year-long spike of violence that shows no sign of abating. The Israeli military said it conducted a raid in the early hours of Wednesday on Kabatia, situated 6 kilometers south of Jenin. The Palestinian Ministry of Health identified the victims as 19-year-old Ahmed Jamal Asif and 24-year-old Warani Walid Katanat. Another Palestinian was injured in the assault. Witnesses said a large number of Israeli forces raided Kabatia and broke into several homes in the western neighborhood of the West Bank city. They violently searched the buildings and ransacked all properties before leaving. The Israeli forces then closed the main streets in the town while laying siege to a number of houses. The regime has stepped up attacks across the occupied territories over the past months. More than 100 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank so far this year.
The gun violence nightmare continues in the U.S. 8 people were shot and several others wounded by a gunman at a busy mall north of Dallas, Texas. The gunman, whom authorities said they believe acted alone, was killed by a police officer after he began firing outside of the mall. He was wearing tactical gear and carrying an AR-15-style rifle during the attack. One young eyewitness described the horrifying moments as the shooting unfolded, including the terrifying sounds of the gunfire, and she remains fearful that such an attack could reoccur.
When I heard it, it was like really loud. It kept going like, poof, poof, poof. And what my dad heard, it was like a pling in a car. And then when we were running, the shots got closer to us, like really, really close. And I thought they were running towards us since we were all running around and there were more people running around us. I felt really scared because many people were running for their lives and some people didn't survive. Some got injured. I'm still feeling scared because it could happen to us at school. It could happen to us at another mall.
Reports say the social media accounts of the shooter contained hundreds of posts with racially or ethnically motivated content and violent far-right rhetoric. The reports say the Dallas attacker may have been linked to white supremacist or neo-Nazi groups.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott called the shooting an unspeakable tragedy.
Texans are hurting today, and the people who are hurting the most, obviously, are the families of the victims, families who've lost a loved one, families who have a loved one who is injured.
Abbott also said there has been a dramatic increase in the amount of anger and violence that's taking place in America. He said mental health problems are the root cause and should be answered. Mass shootings have become commonplace in the United States. Since the beginning of 2023, more than 200 mass shootings have taken place in the country. Credible estimates show that nearly 15,000 people have died this year in gun violence incidents. In the wake of yet another mass shooting, U.S. President Joe Biden has called on Congress to pass gun control bills.
Yesterday, an assailant in tactical gear armed with an AR-15-style assault weapon gunned down innocent people in a shopping mall, and not for the first time. Such an attack is too shocking to be so familiar. We need more action, faster, to save lives.
The Democratic president renewed calls for Congress to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, as well as to enact universal background checks and end immunity for gun manufacturers. Biden, who has made similar pleas before, said members of Congress cannot continue to meet the gun violence epidemic with a shrug. However, there is little chance the narrowly divided House and Senate would pass such legislation, although polls show most Americans support background checks. The U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment protects the right to bear arms, and that issue is a hot-button one for many Republicans who are backed by millions in donations from gun rights groups and manufacturers.
We are not anti-gun. We're not against the Second Amendment. You know, we believe that we must restore the responsibilities that go along with gun rights. There are other peer nations, high-income countries, that have high rates of gun ownership but low rates of gun violence. Those two things can coexist. What we have that no peer nation has is this wealthy, powerful special interest that's been allowed to write our nation's gun laws.
Firearms outnumber the population in the United States, where victims of gun violence are higher than any developed country.
Almighty, peace be upon him, said, "The Lord Most High has chosen for us certain followers, Shiites, who assist us. If we are joyful, they are joyful. And if we are sorrowful and sad, they are sorrowful and sad."
In the Limelight.
At least 34 Palestinians, including 6 children, have been killed in the recent Israeli regime bombing campaign. This is while Biden administration quietly backs the Zionist regime's deadly assaults on Gaza. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Truthout noted, it should come as no surprise that the United States has fully backed the Zionist regime in its recent assault against Gaza. In the hours before the Zionist regime began raining down more bombs on the besieged territory, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke with the Zionist regime Foreign Minister Eli Cohen over the phone. While the readout of their call did not mention what war, at the time, escalating tensions with the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, it is certain that the matter was discussed and that the Zionist regime's intention to bring still more devastation to Gaza did not catch the United States by surprise. Yet, as always, the U.S. response, or lack thereof, is important and needs to be examined. Under President Joe Biden's administration, the U.S. silent support of virtually all Israeli regime actions against the Palestinians has remained as absolute as it was during the administration of Donald Trump, despite growing unease with the Zionist regime's behavior among the majority of Americans. In the occupied territories, the assault on Gaza and the commitment rocket fire coming into southern occupied territories have served to provide a temporary scab over the fracture in the Zionist regime society caused by the current government's efforts to destroy the democracy. In the United States, it has allowed the people to more easily ignore this growing authoritarianism mere days ahead of 75th anniversary of the Zionist regime's Nakba. The argument that Israel has the right to defend itself has quickly made the rounds, and with it, the narrative that the rockets launched from Gaza were random, unprovoked, and expressions of an irrational Palestinian desire to kill Israelis. The reality is, of course, very different, and its burial is a key strategic component that must be countered. On May 2nd, PIJ spokesperson and activist Khazar Adnan died in an Israeli regime prison after an 87-day hunger strike. Despite his outspoken advocacy for resistance and activism in PIJ, the fabricated regime of Israel never charged Adnan with any act of violence. He died after the Zionist regime refused to transfer him to the hospital, despite warnings that his condition was life-threatening. Many viewed Adnan's death as killing by deliberate inaction, and rockets were launched from Gaza while protesters confronted the Zionist regime security forces in the West Bank. A ceasefire and the quiet day-to-day occupation and Israeli regime dominance briefly resumed. But some in the occupied territories were dissatisfied that the Israeli regime response was not harsher. Itamar Ben-Gvir, the radical Kahanis Minister of Internal Security, boycotted government activity and even raised the specter of quitting the government if the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu did not move to do more damage to Gaza. Netanyahu denied this was the reason for breaking the fragile ceasefire that was reached after May 2nd, but in any case, the Zionist regime launched its latest operation and, in the first wave, killed not only three PIJ leaders, but 10 others, including the entire family of one of those targeted. In all, at least 34 Palestinians, including 6 children, have been martyred. In this case, it is clearer than usual that this was in no way the Zionist regime defending itself. The fabricated regime of Israel provoked the entire episode by killing Khadr Adnan through willful neglect. Then, when a brief escalation was stopped, the Zionist regime made the decision, whether due to Ben-Gvir's pressure or not, to attack not only PIJ in a blatantly illegal extrajudicial killing, but to do so by bombing their residences, when their spouses and children would be sleeping and at their most defenseless. Despite reports that the Biden administration was urging the Zionist regime to find a way to resume the ceasefire, the Israeli regime continued its airstrikes against Gaza. PIJ rockets continued to fly from Gaza in response, and while the overwhelming majority of these either fell harmlessly or were intercepted, one did strike a residential building in a Tel Aviv suburb, causing a fatality which will mean ongoing escalation. Netanyahu stated that the attacks on Gaza would continue as long as necessary, a clear indication that any pressure from Washington was not serious. Indeed, senior Biden administration officials, including National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, and Ambassador to the Occupied Territories Tom Knight, were all unified and unequivocal in their full support of the fabricated regime of Israel, barely paying lip service to hope for a ceasefire.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
It was a gathering of defiance and hope, a chance for pro-Palestinian organizations and supporters to remind the international community they have not forgotten about justice for Palestine. 75 years on from the catastrophe, there was an urgent message for the world.
Today, and our first message is one of solidarity to the Palestinian people, those across historic Palestine from the river to the sea, those in the diaspora. The Palestinians expelled in 1948 and their descendants, who today are marking what happened in 1948, the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, the destruction of more than 500 Palestinian villages, but are also marking the Nakba not as a moment rooted in the past, but an ongoing process of colonization, a dispossession and oppression.
Ongoing Israeli aggression and injustices mean the Nakba is not simply a historic moment, but one that demands an immediate response to the current situation.
The Nakba is ongoing, and we have seen the latest threads in that tapestry of the Nakba woven in Gaza once again suffering the raining of Israeli bombs.
The international community continues to fail the Palestinians, not just for their role in the facilitation of the ethnic cleansing and displacement of the people, but for their continued political blind eye, a blind eye that allows Israel to